I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. Well, we see that the IG report has come out, and it is certainly not what everyone had hoped. Although, there are quite a few things in there, and I haven't read it all the way through yet. It's a large report, but just seeing the things that are popping out as people are reading it, we have a little bit to be disappointed about. As we look forward to see, you know, where we're going to go with this, it sounds like the Inspector General, anyway, did find that the FBI was correct to open an investigation into the Trump campaign based on what they had, what information they had. What is damning about this report, and I think it's interesting that Attorney General Barr and his guy, John Durham, who are investigating these things criminally, certainly a different level of look into the situation, have come out and unprecedentedly have come out and said they disagree with some of the findings in the IG report. You know, this points out the swamp and Trump and everything else that we're watching, this fake impeachment thing going on. This is all part of the same kind of a mess that we're looking at. When they say that they find that the FBI had good reason to open this investigation, but as they're saying in this report, significant concerns with how aspects of the investigation were conducted and supervised, but they find no bias in it. Well, if there's significant concerns about how it was investigated and conducted and supervised, wouldn't that lead you to believe that maybe because it was because of bias? We have all seen the text messages from Agent Stroke and Page. You know, we've seen that they had insurance policies, and I'm getting myself upset here, only because for how many months have we come on here in Chasing Justice? And I said my concern was that they would find things wrong, but overall, it was okie dokie. So you have to say, does the attorney, the Inspector General, the report, does that mean the Inspector General is compromised in this situation? He's a Obama appointee. Now, can I be upset because he's an Obama appointee and it didn't come out the way I think it should come out? No, that would be illegitimate, and that would be intellectually false on my part. What I am upset about is that this report comes out, and it seems to absolutely disregard all the things that you and I know took place. If you're saying it seems that there were no bias on the part of anybody here, that they were righteous in opening this investigation based on what they know, but they're saying they identified at least 17 significant errors in the applications for the FISA warrants against Carter Page. Well, one of them we know is being reported as an FBI agent falsified some information in there. Why would you falsify something? To just go after somebody? Why would you just go after somebody? Aren't you fake going after the truth? No, you falsify something to get something that you want for some other reason. Why is it that we can see this? And apparently the Inspector General did not. They're saying that Comey and McCabe did not act with political bias. Really? It's infuriating. And unfortunately, I think we're going to have to wait again now for the Barham investigation to come out, which has a grand jury impaneled. The Attorney General, which is really unique to have the Attorney General of the United States come out and say that based on what he's hearing about this IG report, they already disagree with the findings. That's where I'm saying this is another swamp versus Trump and the change that he's bringing on, because I think Mr. Barr sees, and this is the value I'm giving to him, is that he sees this is not right what went on here. This is not right. Mr. Barham is investigating this, and he's conducting a criminal investigation. And he's got a lot going on there. So he can look at things differently than the Inspector General, who could only, basically, from what I'm understanding, he could only deal with the people who are directly involved. And, you know, these people directly involved, are they going to admit, oh, yeah, that's exactly why we did it? Because you have no power to do anything but refer them for criminal prosecution, as opposed to the John Barham investigation that the Attorney General has authorized, in that they can indict people directly based on their investigation. So, unfortunately, I always said that I hoped I was wrong in seeing this coming. But you know what? If you open your eyes and you look down the road, what are they going to do? Take all of these swamp creatures apart? No, they're all connected. They're all connected one way or another. The Joe Biden family thing, where Biden's family is making all this money, getting his son jobs so that the money's filtered into the family. You know, of course, they're all doing it. You know, now not every single person in Congress or in government is doing that, but lots of them are. That's just the way it's been. That's one of the reasons, you know, how can we as Americans look at a guy who makes $175,000 a year for 10 years? That's $1.75 million. I think we came up with that number pretty accurately. But after 10 years, you have $220 million in the bank. Where did that money come from? How do you have a full-time job as a congressman or a senator and your salary is $175,000 and you end up with $200 million or $100 million or $12 million? How do you do that? Well, that's part of why people get in there and stay forever. It's a pretty good living. You know, it's not fair to the rest of us. It also points out how broken our system is, how broken our government is after these 240-something years. So one of the things I'm contemplating here is I'm thinking about a line of thought, a line of inquiry in my own mind here about how I'm going to deal with this. And one of the things I'm looking at is there was a time at the beginning of our country's history during the Revolutionary War when you had corruption, when you had improper rulers. You know, the crown was treating the colonies improperly, taxing them, brutalizing them, using troops against them, to maintain the order and to demand, you know, their funds, their livelihood, all that. And there was a group of men, and no doubt the women in their lives who were with them, because they all were in this together. But it was the men, the founding fathers of our country, who are unique in history. They are unique in history in that these men, you know, we've all heard the words, they pledged their fortunes, their very honor, their lives to freedom and liberty. And many of them died for their beliefs. But we knew that based on their courage, that their view of what was happening, that they had to take a stand or they were going to lose that moment. You know, divinely inspired, I don't know what it was, but we have not seen the likes of them, or we've seen the likes of them in very few instances since. And what they did back then was to see this untenable situation for what it was, and realized that they had to strike out. They had to do something, and they started the revolution, which we all know ended up leading to our country's birth that we have today. My point is that have we now come full circle to the fruits of what the forefathers provided us? Have we now consumed all of that? And are we now in a position where at some point we're going to have to take a lesson from them, that we're going to have to throw off an oppressive government, just like they wrote the Constitution, because they envisioned that tyranny is the natural state of human condition, and over time, we might fall prey to that. You know, I think they foresaw that because they were unique in time. But my point is, I'm asking myself, could I have been a forefather? Could I be a forefather now? They were revolutionaries in their time. Could I be a revolutionary now? Could you be a revolutionary now? And I'm not calling for violence in the street or anything like that. I'm talking about now we have to think really hard about where we are and what's going on with our country. And how much longer can it stay like this? I've said this so many times. You know, it's part of the contemplation of all of this, is that how long can this level of consternation, anger, frustration. How long can that go on? Does it make us better or does it wear us down? We're at the point now where half of our brothers and sisters in this country don't believe in the traditional America. They want something different. Aren't they revolutionaries? They're not being American patriots. They're actually being revolutionaries for their beliefs. And they're taking over the country and all its institutions and our traditions and our laws in many, many instances. They're changing the country, as Barack Obama said, fundamentally at its base. Isn't that a revolutionary thing to do without a single shot being fired? You know, I know I've seen lots and lots of people out on Twitter. And I see that they're putting out numbers of congressmen and senators telling them to call, which is something we have called on here. You know, we have to let these people know. We're the silent majority, but you know what? We're not so much a majority anymore, but we're still silent for the most part. You know, here on America Out Loud, we get to say things. We get to call. We get to make the call and say, hey, who's listening? Let's do something. But what exactly are we doing? So I liked out there, you know, in the Twitterverse, as I think that's what they call it, when people are out there giving out the numbers and they're doing those things, because it certainly does help us. You know, so based on that, I want to say, I'm going to give some shout outs here. Songbird for Trump. Great job. You know, doing stuff out there. Miranda Peters. Excellent. Ears to Tails. You're out there doing stuff. You know, Price for Justice. These are all Twitter handles of the people that I see here all the time and that are coming and go. Amanda Abella. She's out there trying to do something. She's reaching out to me here. I'm thrilled that people are doing this, you know, and we have our patriots. And I don't mean to sound down. Don't take this as down. I'm just really, really thinking about this. I'm trying to figure out, what do I do? Did I ever expect that this would fall on my generation at this particular time when, if you look at it logically, what they talk about age groups, you know, the demographic for selling things is 18 to 52. But the real power, the financial power, is squared away from people from 50 to 75 because we've earned our whole lives. We have houses. We have assets. We have power. In our economic power. And we also are the people who, when you got to figure, I'm 58, but you know what? I'm in the prime of my life right now. This is the moment, if I'm going to do something, to do it. I have the knowledge, the experience, the expertise, and the ability to think it through. And that's all I'm saying. So I'm not sounding down. I'm simply taking all the facts that are being presented to me, and I'm saying, this isn't right. And I don't know how long I can stand by and just let it be not right. You know, I don't want to say I feel a calling. I think I feel a responsibility. I feel a responsibility to my family. I feel a responsibility to my ancestors. And I feel a responsibility to all those people who are coming after me. I have a little grandbaby, my first grandchild, little Annalisa Grace. She's 7, 8 weeks old. What world is she going to inherit? And what is she going to look back on me and say, hey, Grandpa, what did you do when they were destroying our country, when they were taking away our rights, when they ruined our system? What did you do? And it would be a pretty weak response to say, well, you know, I was working and, you know, I made some phone calls and, you know, oh, I talked on the radio. All great things to do, absolutely. But I think there's more. I think there has to be more. So that's really my question. Am I a patriot? The answer is yes. Am I in a position to do things? Yes, I am. The question is, am I a revolutionary? And what does that mean if I am a revolutionary? How do you step back from that brink once you make that commitment? Are we even at that point now? And I'm not talking about starting a violent revolution. I'm not talking about that. Although that day may come. It may not come in my lifetime. Or it might. And then I have to make those decisions. What I'm talking about right now is what else can I do besides scream at the TV, yell at the news, be angered by the court systems and what they're doing to us, being angered by these politicians that we can't get rid of. We can't get rid of them. We see them lying to our face now like it's nothing, like it's a joke, like we're all a joke. That they're playing us, that half of the people in our country can watch this impeachment debacle go on and see all the inappropriateness that's going on here and not be upset by it. And opposite of being upset by it, being happy. This is great because I hate him so much. I don't care if they break the rules. I don't care what they do. Get rid of this guy. That is so far down the road from what allows a country to survive, what allows a nation to grow and to remain great. You know, they want to make a joke that Trump says, you know, make America great again, keep America great again. What they're doing in this impeachment inquiry is exactly why he is saying this. What they are doing is not greatness. What they are doing is destructive. They are laughing at all of us. We have no control over any of this. We can't stop it, and the media is right along with them. The media helps them at every step. So I think all of us have to start thinking about these questions. What is it that we do, patriots? How do we proceed? Are you a patriot? Are you a revolutionary? These are the kind of questions that come to my mind. Well, let's see. We're gonna take a little bit of a fun break on the next segment because this stuff can get really heavy and get very heady. You know, I need to cool off a little bit. I need to take a deep breath. In the second segment, we are going to have our attorney of record here, Joe Pangara Jr., is going to come on, and he's going to talk a little bit about rules of evidence and who can testify in a court case. And he also has a disorder in the court, some crazy things. You know, another one of them, how many kumquats can you put in a bag? There's actually federal law for that or whatever. But we're going to come back with attorney of record Joe, and we're going to talk a little bit about these people that are testifying. You know, we saw these professors all testifying, you know, at this impeachment hearing, and they basically were biased, as biased could possibly be, how you could not see that bias in their position, compared to Jonathan Turley, who, as we've said many times, we know he's not a Republican. He did not vote for Trump. He voted for Hillary. All right, so I guess in the grand scheme, that's supposed to give him some credibility that, hey, he's not even with Trump. He's like Dershowitz. Dershowitz is not a Trump guy, but he sees the damage that these people are doing to the greater country, to the greater Constitution, to your freedoms and mine. So Joe, who's a brilliant attorney, is going to come on and talk to us a little bit about who could testify. If this was in a court of law, would those people be allowed to testify? People that didn't actually participate in the phone call with Trump? People who didn't actually talk to the president about it? I don't know. We're going to hear from Joe in a little bit when we come back for segment two here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutLoud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we have one of our favorites back. I know you all text me, you send me emails, and here he is, the lawyer of record for Chasing Justice. We have our own attorney on board. This would be Joe Pangaro Jr. Joe, how are you?
Hey, Dad, it's great to be back. As always, I'm a fan of the show, so I'm very excited to be on the show instead of just listening.
Now, it's funny, people say, your son sounds just like you. Well, he does, and he also is as good-looking as me. So, you know, when you take a picture, you can see it's what's going on. So, Joe, I'm glad you're here, and your legal expertise is absolutely amazing. I'm always amazed by your career and what you got going on. So we do disorder in the court here, and that's one of our segments, because the court is filled with so many ridiculous things, laws that are still on the books, like you can't walk your horse to the trough, and he can't drink anymore, and that's still on the books in some states.
You can't bring multiple hamsters on a flight without adequate water supplies for each individual hamster. Yes, that's a law as well.
Well, it's funny. In my police teaching, I was teaching in New Jersey the other day, and I do a course on liquor license investigations. When you buy a liquor license, transfer it, or you renew it, you have to do an investigation. And we look at the Title 33 is what it's called, laws of New Jersey. They came into play after prohibition. So a lot of the laws that are in there have been updated, but many of them haven't. Like, they give you ages of how old people can be when they actually work in an area where liquor is being sold and bought and distributed. And one of them is, at 15 years old, you can be a pin boy in a bowling alley that serves beer. Now, when's the last time you've seen a pin boy in a bowling alley?
What I really like is the idea that there's, Jimmy the Nose, the 14-year-old pin boy, who's been chased all over playdrums in the Northeast Corridor, and they're trying to catch him. What's funny is it is just as hard to strike a law as it is to pass a law. So a lot of times you'll see legislation just kind of continues on and is no longer paid attention to or is no longer enforced, because it's easier to just ignore it than it is to get, you know, 2/3 majority of the House to agree and then the governor to sign to strike a law.
So that's interesting, because you know what? I never really thought of that. That's the process. Like, if they want to get rid of the pin boy law, because we don't have pin setters anymore, they have to actually have the legislation vote on that to remove that. They can't just, the governor can't just, that's...
That makes intuitive sense, because if a governor could just decide, well, this isn't a law anymore, then he could do that for laws we still want on the books just as easily as laws we don't. So if you want a law to not exist anymore, it's the same process to remove it as it is to pass it, which is why it's so difficult. And that's why you see a lot of times there are these statutes that have very odd, old, quirky rules about, you know, how many people can hold a horse and when you can transfer. I think there was a rule that you can't transfer a woman under 15 across state lines unless she's with a parent. And there's weird rules on the books that you can see. It's like, oh, well, this was passed in 1872. And it's just easier to ignore it than it is to deal with it in any substantive way now.
Okay, see, when I hear you talk, though, you know, this is the investigator in me. I sit there and I hear that and I say, okay. So, and I know you're not a prosecutor, you do corporate kind of law stuff. So, as a lawsuit, if somebody transported my 15-year-old daughter across the border without a parent, could I still have a lawsuit based on that law from 1872?
Well, here's where it gets a little too lawyerly. If they included within the law some sort of civil damages for you, you could pursue it, and then a lawyer would fight about it, and then likely a judge would strike it down for some reason, and a law would be removed. So a famous example that people know from law school, it's called the Filled Milk Act. This was basically milk substitutes. They said you couldn't process, you couldn't transport them interstate, across state lines. It was a big deal, I guess, back in the 1800s and early 1900s, when there was a lot of fake milk out there. There is no more fake milk out there these days. And so in 1978, the judge finally struck the law down when someone brought it to court. But that's one way, that's probably the most common way for a law to be removed.
So a judge can actually wave a wand basically and get rid of a law that's outdated?
He can't just say because it's outdated.
No, but he has to have the case facts.
If there's a sufficient basis to find the law, for instance, is unconstitutional, the judge can say this law is unconstitutional and you can't move forward.
And then, of course, someone could appeal that, and they would have to see if it was still constitutional in the appeals division, which, of course, they never would, which is our system.
Right. Exactly. And then you have four lawyers altogether, four judges altogether, collectively making over $1 million of taxpayer money, debating the Filled Milk Act of 1927.
Right. So, okay, that one last question on that. what the hell is fake milk? What the hell did they come up with in 1827 that was fake milk?
As near as I can tell, it was a powdered milk that caused severe health damage. And so it was, you know, if you needed some sustenance during the Depression, you take filled milk before you took nothing. But that was pretty much the only thing it was good for.
It's either that or rock soup. Okay, that makes perfect sense. Well, thank you. See, and this is why we get an attorney involved here, because the law is amazing. And we talk about law all the time here in Chasing Justice. That's one of the things. Chasing Justice. Justice in America is brought to us normally through case law. You know, somebody has a grievance, somebody has a problem, something happens, and therefore someone goes and says, that's not right. You didn't do the right thing by me. I was aggrieved. I was damaged. I was whatever. And who's to decide that? Well, we have courts. And you go into court and a judge will sit there and make a determination if you were aggrieved, if you were injured in some way, and someone has to do right by you. So that's why I'm glad we have attorneys. But you can also see, as much as I love my son and all the attorneys out there, holy moly, how can they mix things up for us when we get things going on? Good work, son. So, Joe, what do you got for us in disorder in the court here for Chasing Justice? What's a ridiculous court case that's going on?
Well, I know we've got a couple of topics today, and so if the theme is no one is above the law, I think can be our theme today. There are three judges, I will just call them Judge A, Judge B, and Judge C, who got themselves into a bit of trouble recently in Indiana, and they've all had their law licenses put under review, and this is the court case reviewing them. There was a conference, a judicial conference, in Indiana. Somewhere around 12:30 a.m., all three judges were seen drinking at a local bar. Somewhere around 3 a.m., the judges decided to make their way, two men and one woman, decided to make their way to a strip club. When they found the strip club was closed, they went to White Castle. Yes, sir, this case involves a White Castle, a strip club, and three drunken judges. Two gentlemen, not familiar with the judges, drove past and shouted something derogatory out the window. The female judge, we'll call her Judge A, gave them the middle finger. Well, guess what? Those gentlemen decided to pull into the White Castle parking lot and have themselves a brawl with the judges. Judge A testified during her hearing she has absolutely no recollection of the incident, but concedes that the security cameras accurately captured her behavior. Well, here's where it takes a serious turn.
A serious turn. Okay, go ahead.
No, Judge B got in a fight with one of these gentlemen, wrestled him to the ground, held him there, and said, "This is over. Tell me that this is over." The guy said, "Yes, it's over." Judge B got off. The guy then pulls out a gun, shoots Judge B twice in the chest, and shoots Judge C once in the stomach. Both of them, thank goodness, survived. They're okay. They both had several emergency surgeries and spent, you know, at least 14 days in the hospital. But for all of their behavior, conduct unbecoming, they were punished judicially for their actions. And so I think that's a good theme for today is no one is above the law. And if it's 3 a.m., no matter who you are, even if you're a judge in Indiana, just go home. Don't go to a White Castle and flip off strangers. They might have a gun. It might not work out well. So just go home. At 3 a.m., just go home.
You know, I got to tell you, you bring up these cases, the kumquat case, you know, the how many turtles can you have in a suitcase? it's absurd, but I kind of see the ridiculous. I'm saying these must be three pretty cool judges that they're all drinking and they're heading out to a White Castle. Does it say what level of judge? Were they municipal judge, superior court judge? Were they county judge? Who are these judges?
One of them was a magistrate judge, which is they handle the discovery motions and things like that. The other two were Indiana county judges, and they suffered some Indiana justice from the Indiana judicial system. And hopefully everyone's okay, mm-hmm. And hopefully this never happens again. But just the idea of a judge drunkenly flipping the bird and starting a fight for her two friends at 3 a.m.
Yes. So that leads me to two things here on Chasing Justice, because I know there's a lot of judges and judicial people who do listen, part of the family, the Chasing Justice family. Judges, don't go drinking and go to White Castles and start fights with people. Now, Joe, let me ask you a question, though. When the judge held the guy on the ground who was being the combatant, mm-hmm. and the judge is now protecting himself and the other judges, so he's doing a third-party use of force to protect other people, sure. And he said to that guy, "Are we done?" The guy said, "Yes." when he got up and the guy then started shooting, was that a breach of contract in any way? The guy said yes, and then he turned around and affected the judge. How would that work out?
You know, one thing they teach you in law school is you never sue someone who can't afford it. Don't waste your time going after the money. So if your client is the kind of guy who will get into a random drunken fight with a judge at 3 a.m. and then break his word by shooting the judge in the chest, odds are he doesn't have a mansion for you to go after. So I think probably that was the least of his concern.
Okay, so there we go. Disorder in the court.
Attempted murder of a judge, probably higher on the list.
Over a slider during a drunken evening. But hey, at least he was standing up for the judge and they all stuck together. That's a good thing. I like that. So now, listen, we love disorder in the court, and we love the funniness, and because some of these things are absurd. But I do want to, you know, tap your expertise as a trial attorney, because that's what you do. You're out there. You're an expert trial attorney. Let's look at the Trump situation right now with what they're doing, because I know a lot of the Chasing Justice family, we're following this very closely. I know a lot of people are really incensed by what we saw in the processes, where it was one-sided. They had secret chambers down below in a basement somewhere where they only brought in certain witnesses. And now we're seeing that the people who were coming forward, Adam Schiff and his crew, coming out going, it's absolutely crystal clear based on the evidence. But no one else was allowed to ask questions. No one else was allowed to do that. And a lot of the people that testified they heard from another guy who heard from another guy who heard from another guy that Trump said or did something.
Sure.
Now, that might be Trump calling right now, because he's in the background. He's always listening.
That's
to
Shifty Schiff. He's a fan, and I think he's tapped your wires.
He's
here.
Trying to tap our wires. So what I'm asking you is, as an attorney, the hearsay, what's the whole thing with hearsay? If I don't have direct evidence that I listened to you make a phone call, but I heard from three other people what you might have said, if I go in a court of law, is a judge going to allow me to sit there and say what I think happened, my impressions, or what I believe happened? Or do I have to have like direct knowledge of that phone call?
So just so everyone understands, the federal rules of evidence, there are only certain types of things that can be brought in and be considered during a trial. And so one thing you can do is obviously you need to talk about how an altercation happened. Let's take the judges at the White Castle event, for instance. You need to be able to testify to things that you directly heard and you directly said. And the value of that is so that the attorneys can cross-examine you, and then the people, the jury, can evaluate your credibility. So you're saying you heard it? Well, let me ask you some questions about it. And if the jury doesn't believe you, they can flesh out that you're lying. Mm-hmm. Hearsay is when we don't have the person who said it. We have someone who says they heard someone say it. It's a step removed. And the exception to hearsay is not allowed in court. The one exception is it's not being offered for the truth of the matter asserted. So you can say, hey, why did you go in the room? Because my dad told me to go in the room. Objection, hearsay. Your dad's not here to say whether or not he said to go in the room. Well, I could say it's not being offered for the truth of the matter asserted. It's not being offered to prove your dad said go in the room. It's just being offered so that you can understand. We can understand why you went in the room. It's not proof of the matter asserted. Now, in this case, there's multiple steps of, hey, Sondland heard someone say something to someone else who said something. No, the short answer is no, that would never come in. The only way it could come in is if they were testifying not for the truth that it actually happened, but just, well, Sondland, why did you react this way? Because I heard this. So even if it ever did come in, it couldn't come in as evidence that it was actually done. It could just be come in as evidence of why Lieutenant Colonel Vindman behaved in a certain way, you know, but it would not have anything to do with whether or not it actually happened.
Right. Okay. So what I'm getting you saying is that if I was to call these people and say, listen, Bob Jones, you showed up at that White Castle that night and you saw the fist fight going on, but you have no idea why they're fist fighting, but you videotaped it and then you went on Facebook and said, man, it was really horrifying. So what you're saying is that through hearsay, I don't know anything why the fight happened,
I could simply set a stage as to why.
Here's a perfect example. You saw the fight happening, and one of the judges said, the fight happened because Judge C yelled something at the car going by. Well, we know from the facts I gave you that's not why it happened. It happened because the car yelled at Judge C. So you can see how quickly things can get things can get confused. But you couldn't come in and testify why the fight happened. You could just testify maybe what the judge said to you, but you couldn't. What you were saying doesn't count as evidence.
Okay, that's perfect. So for our Chasing Justice audience, we saw in the recent hearings that the Democrat Party put on, Adam Schiff and his crew, they had people who said, I heard from someone else. This is what I said, and my opinion is I believe this is why somebody did something. How far would that get as being actually, would the judge caution the jury that, listen, this is just an opinion, this is not fact?
At that point, none of that would come in.
Here's
a simple way to think about it. If you ever played telephone, the game where everybody sits in a circle and one person whispers down the lane to the next person.
We did it in the neighborhood last week, and Jim got it all wrong.
The wild card, Jimmy Giordano, the character of the year. Mm-hmm. No, here's a good way to think. The person who starts the chain, who whispers to the next person, can testify. The very next person in line might be able to testify, but whatever he testifies to doesn't count as proof. Nobody else in that chain can testify.
Okay, so I think you've clarified that a little bit for all of us. I get it better. Let me ask you this then. As a person who deals with the law, and you have a great understanding of the law, I'm very impressed with that. What is the value of direct knowledge of an incident as opposed to, we all know, we've heard from friends that something happened, and it turns out it really did. What is the value of only dealing with the people who actually heard it and saw it as opposed to those who really think they heard it and saw it? What is that in a court case? How is that valuable to you as an individual citizen?
It's important because it's the only way to really test the facts that are asserted. So if somebody actually sat there and watched something happen, they can testify to it. And if they're not willing to testify to it, then there's not really a case. There's not really evidence. If someone watches something happen, tells their neighbor, who tells their neighbor, and then that guy comes in, there's way too much opportunity for it to be a forgery. So it's the same thing if you're going to hand a document into court. Before you can't just put a document into evidence. You need someone to testify, yes, that's my signature on the document. Yes, this document means this and that. Yes, this was what we dealt with at the time of the incident.
Right.
Even a document needs to be verified. It's the same thing with someone testifying about what happened. There needs to be a way to prove what is actually at issue.
Because when you're the person sitting in the hot seat,
right,
and they're charging you with something, just because 12 other people think they know what you did wrong doesn't mean you actually did it.
Right.
And for you to be held accountable legally in our court system, you need to have facts, and the jury has to determine based on fact, not on people's opinions. Because people might not like you. They may have a different opinion of you. So fact is really based on, I actually saw the evidence, and that protects us. Isn't that what protects us as citizens?
That's it. That's exactly right. The only thing that I'll say is different is within the impeachment process. The whole idea here, they don't have to follow the rules of evidence, and the check on that is the people. If the people are willing to let this happen and it doesn't change their votes, it doesn't impact how they vote, then that's just what Congress is allowed, is able to do, whatever they can get away with. The idea being, you're having this public hearing, you're doing it in this unfair way. If people see that and vote, that's the check on the behavior. Adam Schiff, believe it or not, he got into office, he first got elected because he opposed the impeachment of Bill Clinton. And there was actually a Republican who was in his seat beforehand. He got the job because people didn't like how Bill Clinton's impeachment was handled, whether you agree with that or not.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the kind of thing. Schiff's behavior is on live TV. Maybe his constituents feel the same
way. So the ultimate answer here is the election of 2020. The American people should determine, between all this hearsay and nonsense, what really happened.
And their behavior will be, and these guys' behavior will be checked by that.
Joe, thank you so much. Hey, once again here on Chasing Justice, you get it from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Here we have the attorney of record, Joe Pangaro. Joe, thank you. We'll be back in a minute with Chasing Justice.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, then. Welcome back to Chasing Justice here for round three. Ding, 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 ding. On the America Out Loud Radio Network. So I want to thank Joe for being on. It's always fun to have my son on. And he really is brilliant. Not saying that just because I'm his father. I'm saying because he really is a brilliant kid. He leaves me in the dust when it comes to intellect. Just a really great guy. So where are we going to go here? Where is this little runaround going to take us here on round three here? You know, more and more is going to come out about the IG report. You know, we're going to have to take it apart day by day. There'll be little nuggets hidden in there. There'll be commentary hidden in there. We'll be looking for bias. We'll be looking for cover-up. We'll be looking for truths. You know, I don't know the Inspector General. Everyone made him out to be such a really good guy. But I think they said that about Mueller too, right? Mueller, greatest guy, greatest guy, greatest guy. And then he perpetrated that fraud on the American people. You know, the minute he knew there was no collusion, it didn't exist. It didn't happen. He should have come out and said, listen, this is what I'm here to find. There is no collusion. You know, but we could talk about the Mueller report for a million years. The only reason I'm bringing it back up to remind everyone about that is that there was no collusion. We knew that. Mueller knew it. But he kept on with this investigation for a couple of years. Lots of money, but you know what? For $50 million, you know, they spend $50 million, I think, what, every 35 seconds in Washington? So while it is a waste of $50 million, could have used that better for the American people, the reality is that was really nothing in the scheme of things. But his report came out 2 years, and I'm going to say probably pretty soon after he found out when he first got started, there was no collusion. They looked into some stuff. That should have been it. He should have come out and had a press conference and said, listen, I'm going to write my report. But this is all nonsense. There is no collusion between the president and the Russians. President Obama came out and said there's absolutely no way anyone could physically affect the elections. You can't change votes. We don't have every voting booth in America hooked up to a computer where a Russian hacker can get in and go, let's see, instead of a million for Hillary, let's make it a million for Trump. They can't do that. They can't change those kind of records. We're not all connected like that. You know, that's one of the problems with having an electronic system is because we can be hacked. And we could talk about that in another show. But when we look at that Mueller report, we know that was bogus. And after it came out, we saw that a lot of people kind of said, well, I guess it really was bogus. There was no Russian colluding between Trump and Putin. And it kind of died away. But now we see that the impeachment inquiry is coming up with, I think what I'm reading now, there's four articles of impeachment, and one of them is going to be colluding with Russia to affect the elections. How can they possibly say that when the Mueller report came out and said there was no collusion? And then what I'm seeing is this obstruction. You know, this word obstruction, obstruction, obstruction. To obstruct. They're saying that by saying he's not guilty, by President Trump saying he's not guilty publicly, and then going after the investigators that he knows are fraudulently going after him, that's obstructing their investigation. Now, we can take that apart for a second. We have to be reasonable and think about this. Reality seeps into things. Now, when Harry Dumwinkle comes out on his front porch and says, you know, they're coming after me for no reason, doesn't really affect anything because he's standing on his porch and, you know, basically just a regular guy being prosecuted for whatever he's charged with doing. But when the president of the United States comes out and makes a statement and says something,
every single word that the president says has weight and has importance. And I think that's absolutely true. So if a president comes out and says tomorrow, we're going to tariff every country that's not nice to us, our economy might drop. We would lose stock money. It would be catastrophic events because the president says something. All right. So the words that he uses and how and when he uses them is very important. What I think is unique to this situation is that I think we have someone who's an outsider who went in there to what we all say, right? Oh, if I was the president, I would fix things. Well, he actually got the chance to get in there and be the president and fix things. And he's being attacked on every angle. Now, keeping in mind that I said the words of the president do make a difference out there. When he comes out and says, I'm not guilty, and the prosecutor is a fraud, I could see where people would say, well, that's causing a problem in the investigation because the president said it. It carries a lot of weight. But in reality, I think you also got to look at the human side of it. Here's a man who's trying to do right by his country, and he's being lied about. He's being attacked. His family's being attacked every minute of every day. And I think he's frustrated with the system. You know, wouldn't it be nice if there was some overseeing department? And I don't know who these people would be, because of course they'd be corrupt too. Some overseeing department that would be able to call out nonsense and come out and say, wait. Yeah, the Congress absolutely has this ability to do impeachment stuff, but not like this. This is inappropriate. You would hope that, you know, there was some mechanism. Could they file a lawsuit and have it go to the Supreme Court and have the Supreme Court say, no, the process was inappropriate? Well, we all know we can't because the House, just like the Senate, writes its own rules, and those rules are, you know, constitutional. So I called this impeachment inquiry, I called it illegitimate. Now, I want to clarify that because, again, words mean things. So when I say it's illegitimate, does that mean they don't have the authority to conduct it? No, they certainly do have the authority to conduct it. Does that mean that they can't call only the witnesses they want to call? No, they certainly can. We saw them do that. Can they hold secret hearings in the basement where no one's allowed to speak but the people running the investigation? Obviously they can. They just did it. Nobody stepped in and arrested Mr. Schiff and said, hey, that's inappropriate. You're under arrest. Nobody did that. He was allowed to do it. Could it stop them from coming up with lies, like Mr. Schiff coming out and say, before the transcript of the phone call that this is all about came out, when he came out and made up that conversation? I told you my opinion was that he wrote that not knowing that the president was going to release the transcript. So therefore, he could have come out and I'm telling you 8 times, you better come up with some dirt. You better go after this guy, that was their hopes. See, that's what they're trying to convince people that went on. So then he releases the transcript, the president, and you realize he never said any of those things. Schiff made that whole thing up. And how is he held to account? Not at all. Nobody stepped in and said, you made that up. That wasn't true. You don't get to run these hearings anymore. No, instead, he got to call more witnesses. He got to call more people. He got to blow it off. The press didn't go after him. I know one of the outlets gave him 4 Pinocchios. You know, what the hell does that mean? What's a Pinocchio? Who the hell cares? Did it change anything? No, they got to then come out with their professors, their biased professors who came out and gave their opinions about things. And then, well, there you go. And then Nancy Pelosi comes out the other day and she says, the evidence is clear. It is uncontested that the president obstructed. He did all of these impeachment things. He used his office to go after a political opponent, even though the only people that actually heard the conversation, the one ambassador who said, no, there was none of that, and then even said that the president told him there will be no quid pro quo. I don't want that. That's direct evidence, as we heard, you know, our attorney of record talking about. That guy actually heard that, was there. He heard the conversation. And so you got to say that's what happened, not Schiff's made-up conversation. Then we have Pelosi saying it's uncontested. Well, of course it's uncontested. It was only their witnesses, their biased witnesses. Did Trump do it? Yes, he did. What do you think about that? I think he's guilty. I think he's been doing it all along. I think he's bad. He's bad, 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 bad.
Okay, so let's raise our hands. Who thinks he's bad? And everyone in that room that's allowed to speak raises their hand. And they go, okay, well, there you go. It's uncontested. That is such nonsense. Isn't that a lie to the American people? How many experts have we heard here on America Out Loud, on various other networks, when they allow someone to speak, that comes out and says, oh, no, that's completely inappropriate. What they're doing is not right. It is contested, but that's allowed to stand. Not one reporter have I seen so far come back and go, Mrs. Pelosi, what do you mean it's not contested? It's contested by the president, it's contested by his attorneys, and it's contested by other experts who say what you did was a sham. Not a word. Nothing. Because everyone's happy just to run it on through. This is your nation. This is your country now. None of this matters. No one's held to account. There's nothing. And now we're looking at the AG report and we're seeing that, uh-oh, there goes another bite at the apple, that no one's going to be held account. Oh, people are going to be blamed. There's going to be some fingers pointed. But it's all going to be, and I'm going to tell you, here's how it's going to come out. Because the IG came out and said there was no bias and there was no intent to do anything inappropriate, therefore, anything they did was legitimate. Anything they did was legitimate because they had a good reason to start the investigation. They thought they were protecting the country, and everything is good. That means nobody did anything wrong. If everything was good, if your motives were pure, and that was really what that was about, did they find motives, even though we can all see the motives very clearly, the fact that the Inspector General could not apparently see the obvious motives, or he covered up the obvious motives, I don't know. But you tell me, we heard by their own words, their own texts, what they were doing, why they were doing insurance policies. We hate this guy. We got to get rid of him. Don't worry about it. You know, it's unbelievable that that happened. So when I say that Ms. Pelosi and her impeachment is illegitimate, I don't mean authoritatively illegitimate. They have every right to do exactly what they're doing. They're allowed to do this. What makes it illegitimate is that it's completely unethical and inappropriate, and therefore it is illegitimate. Okay? It's illegitimate. A police officer has a right to use force to effect an arrest. All right? So if somebody fights with you, you can fight back. If they pull a knife, you can pull a gun. That's how the law is written. But you get a guy that resists and an officer just shoots him. Well, the officer can come up with all his reasons in the world that he has the law on his side. It's still illegitimate if there was not enough reasonable reason to use that level of force, okay? So we have to be clear on these things. Even though it's legal, does not make it legitimate. It is illegitimate what they're doing to our country. And I don't know where else to go with a thing like that. It's I guess we'll have to see now. We're going to hang on to the next thing, which is not going to come out anytime soon. You're not going to hear about, the Barham investigation for quite a while, if even before the election, you know, which might be another, you know, deep state way to, oh, all these people are guilty, but the election's over, so we're going to move on. I hate that I have to even think like that. I hate that that has to even be a part of what we have to deal with. But I don't know, maybe it was always like this. Maybe it was always like this, we just didn't see it because everyone seemed to be rowing in the right direction. The country was growing and moving ahead. We all loved America. We all wanted to fix the things that were wrong with America, but we were all Americans. We were all red, white, and blue. We hung the flag in our yards and said, let's be better. Let's fix what was wrong. We're all Americans. Now, not so much. Not so much. So we are on the precipice here of a big change. And I think the illegitimate nature of this entire inquiry is problematic for all of us. Now, the president says they're not going to participate. His team's not going to participate in this illegitimate situation. Go ahead, impeach me. Send it up to the Senate. Now, there's the next bite of the apple. This Lindsey Graham seems to be a pretty squared away kind of guy in all of this. You know, I mean, he's been a critic of the president, but he's also been a strong proponent of the president, and he sees the nonsense and the illegitimacy of this. I don't know about Mitch McConnell. Does he see the illegitimacy in it? I haven't heard words out of him.
I heard him say, there's going to be trial. We're going to have a trial. Absolutely. If they send it up, we're going to have a trial. Why would you have an illegitimate trial and let them put on more witnesses that are liars, that have proved that they lied? And as we heard from, Joe, our attorney of record, half those people that testified in this inquiry nonsense will not be allowed to testify in court. It's all opinion. It's all opinion. It's like me saying, you know what? Rock and roll race car Jack called me up and he heard that this politician did A, B, C, and D. Wow, and Jack heard that from a friend. And we started an investigation over that. Right? You start an investigation over what somebody heard, somebody said that they said, they heard their cousin said it, their brother-in-law wrote it on a piece of paper and put it in a bottle, and we found it, and therefore we're going to start an investigation. There's no facts, there's no evidence, there's no anything. You know, how do we come to your house and start an investigation for bank robbery? Doesn't mean, you robbed a bank, it just means somebody said you did. So we're going to start investigating you, we're going to pull your records. There's no proof, there's no evidence of all that you did anything to investigate you. That is a rogue state that does that. You have to have evidence. I was a detective for many years. I don't just start investigating people. I had to vet out the information. You know, and a lot of times people would come in and we'd have to look at them and say, why is this person giving this information? And you'd start to realize that maybe it was someone who had a grudge against the person they were reporting about. And it turns out that, maybe the person's doing something wrong, but it's not something that's going to rise to a major investigation. But this person wants to get them, so they make up a lot of different facts. You have to vet that, and you find out this person's lying. You don't start the investigation and go after the guy and say, hey, thanks a lot, we want to do this. No, it's absurd. This is all backwards. It's all backwards, and it's just not correct. All right? One of the things I did see is that Mr. Schiff didn't show up today. He didn't show up today. Isn't that interesting? They're having these hearings and he doesn't show up. Are they going to subpoena him? Is Mitch McConnell going to do the right thing and have a closed door session of all their experts and have them get together and say, the whole thing the Congress did was illegitimate, therefore we're dismissing the entire charges. This didn't happen and the president is not guilty of any of it. Boy, wouldn't that be great to see something like that? Are we going to see that? I don't think so. I think, unfortunately, we're going to see a ridiculous trial where these people are going to come out with these ridiculous witnesses. And that's the other thing. You lie in court. That's perjury. How come we haven't seen anybody arrested for perjuring themselves when they make things up in court? You know, if you or I went into court and you lied to a judge, you wouldn't be just told, hey, you were trying to do the right thing. That's okay. No, you'd be handcuffed and dragged out of there and frog marched to the county jail. Right? So we have a lot of indiscrepancies in our system here, ladies and gentlemen. Lots of indiscrepancies. So let's talk about what did we learn today? Well, we learned that Joe, the attorney of record, is a brilliant young man. We learned that the Pelosi, Schiff, Nadler impeachment inquiry is illegitimate. I think we can settle on that. I think we've learned that we're trying to decide what kind of patriots we are. Are we small p patriots or are we capital P patriots? Are we looking at the founding fathers as once in a lifetime people that can never be recreated? Or are we looking in the mirror asking ourselves, could you be a founding father? Could you be a patriot with a capital P? Could you be a revolutionary? Are you willing to save your country for your family and your children? These are the big questions we ask here on Chasing Justice. And I'm going to leave you with that. Pay attention to this report this week as it comes out. Listen to the facts. Go read it yourself. Pay attention to what's going on. And we will rejoin together here shortly on the next episode of Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.